Hi, everybody. Today I have the chance to talk with the legendary Australian singer and musician Russell Morris about his life in music and a new project named Jack Chrome. Hi, Russell.
Hello, Jérôme.
How are you doing?
Bonjour. I'm good. I'm very good.
Okay, cool. My first question is concerning your career. I have noted that a lot of musicians, singers have started their careers into a band. Is this something very important for you to begin as in a band and after start your own career, or there is no rules?
I don't know. I don't know if there are any rules. I just don't think there are any rules. I think you just play the game of cards with the amount of cards that you've been dealt, and try and make the best out of a creation. Yeah, I don't think there's any rules.
Yeah. Okay. And you are Australian, and I have to say that for me, I was born in 1970. The Australian songs was coming from bands like INXS or Midnight Oil, with a very special touch in their sound and accent. But this is not the same for you, because your songs sounds very California, English, pop, country, deep rock. Is that something that you search or wanted at the beginning of your career?
I think I fell into it because I was a young guy, and it depends what you listen to. And the songs that I listened to very early on were John Lee Hooker, Howling Wolf, the Rolling Stones, a lot of blues, and a lot of Tamla Motown music. I loved Sam and Dave and Four Tops. So in our first band, we would sing all those sort of songs. So, and I think you tend to imitate when you're young, and you pick up accents, and if you listen to Mick Jagger and Elton John, they always say, "Dance, dance, come on, wow." Yeah, and they've got these southern accents, and they've obviously done the same thing.
Okay. And about the timing of your tracks, we all can actually heard bands like Yes doing songs around sometimes 5 to 7 minutes. This is a total non-actual radio format. Do you think because we are in 2021 and people have no time to listen to a song more than a 2 3 minute max, that the young generation of listeners can come easily to listen album with some titles around 7 minutes?
I think a lot of younger generation people cherry pick. What they'll do is they'll like a couple of songs, and they'll take them off Spotify or take them off one of the streaming platforms and buy them, or buy them off iTunes, and they just keep those songs. They tend to not buy albums so much unless they're really obsessed by the artist. Now, I think it's great when they buy, and that's I like to buy an album because I like to look at the pictures and I like to read the words. And that's when we, because when we did this album, the new one I've just done, which is a concept album, everyone thought we were crazy. So no one does concept albums anymore. And we said, well, who cares? We just want to do what we want to do.
Because bands like Toto made a lot of songs around 3 minutes, perfect radio format.
Yeah, that's right. I have fallen victim. Sometimes I'll do a song that's really long, and the record company will go, "Oh, we'll never get an airplay with this. So we need to splice it and cut it up." So they chop bits out of it, which is usually really annoying. But you tend to buckle under sometimes and let them do it.
About the real thing, I said, wow, what a singer, very experimental. How can we transform something acoustic in a studio sound? And at the end, do you think that the results was exactly what you wanted? Because this is so special. When I heard this song, I was in the movie Zodiac. It's very
I think the real thing was supposed to be a
acoustic.
combination of a lot of the loves of the,
Different
and it's
things.
produced by a guy called Ian Meldrum, and him and I are great mates. And it was the loves of a lot of songs that we had put in there. We loved Ichiku Park. We loved Hurdy Gurdy Man by Donovan. We loved Hey Jude and I Am the Walrus. And it was like we tried to do a potpourri of all those songs and put them all together and make this a journey. And that's what it was. It became a journey. And we weren't sure whether we were going to get any airplay, but people on radio loved it because they could actually put it on and sneak out and make a cup of coffee or go to the toilet because it ran for 6.5 hours. So it gave them plenty of leeway and lots of time, spare time. Mm.
And at the end, boom. There is the song, boom. Yeah. Special.
It's all about, it's all supposed to be about ego, and it's about the ego of people and being sucked up in and getting caught in wars and being dragged into wars following someone who's got a gigantic ego. And the end was the final, which was the bomb, which ends everything.
It was one of the first times that we could hear this kind of sound at the end of the record.
Yeah, right. I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. yeah. Yes, very experimental. And how did you do at the end of the 70s to create that special song from a blank page? Because what you were created was never did before, to starting with a blank page.
I think what happens, sometimes a bit of magic goes on in the studio. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll have a song. The song is written in fourths, which are very pleasing to the ear. And for that was good. But I just happened to have the right band, the guys that walked into the studio.
The right guys, yeah.
Yeah, played the right bass part. The drummer was perfect. In fact, the drum feel he played was almost a modern feel now, like a dance feel, because Kylie Minogue did it at one stage. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her to do it as an acid dance feel. But I wasn't in the studio. She did it with another guy. And I would have done it a little bit different. I think it would have been much better if I had have done it. But they did it. And sometimes you can go in and magically something will come. And it's almost like being an alchemist, like those old alchemists. They used to put all these things in beakers and trying to forge gold and make gold out of all these different elements. And it's almost like you've done that sometimes. You walk in and the odd assortment of guys you can put together and everything works and something magic happens.
Mm-hmm. And then you go, that's all.
Then you go, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the 80s, saw a real change in your music with more piano and keyboard sessions. Are you agree with that, with these kind of changes in your music with more piano and keyboards at the beginning of the 80s?
I tended to, in the 80s, I was one of those children dancing along behind the Pied Piper. Uh-huh. You heard the story of the Pied Piper and the children of Hamelin. Mm-hmm. And he was playing the tune. I was following him. I had to get to the Pied Piper. So consequently, I think one of the biggest dangers in music is to follow the Pied Piper and try and replicate what is happening today. Mm-hmm. Because if you do, you're just one of the run of the mill. Mm-hmm. I think what you do is you find your own style, you find what you want to do. And that took me till I was in 2013, till I decided this is what I was going to do. And I wasn't going to continue trying to write hit songs or things like that, because you get trapped up in that trap of the record company saying, we want a hit song, we want a hit song. And you're
a bad circle.
You look at what's commercial on the radio and you go, oh, I should be more like that. And I think that is the biggest mistake, because that ship has already left the port. You'll never catch it. You've got to find your own ship to sail. It doesn't matter if it's got leaks in it. You have to come up with something that's different and unusual. And sometimes that doesn't work, because the wheel of creation sometimes spins at a very slow or fast rate, and you might find yourself completely out of sync with everybody else. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you'll do something completely different and all of a sudden that people will go, wow, that is different.
Yeah, because I was talking about that with John Waite, because I said fame can be a cage.
Yeah.
So this is, there is always a danger in this kind of situation. And about your album, Southern Suns from 1991, is an album with, for me, a kind of sadness, great ballads like Between the Waves, and solid rock with other excited. What was your will with this album, A Southern Suns?
I was probably still chasing, trying to have a hit record, because out in Australia, there's a really big star called John Farnham. He'd had a huge record, which was along those sort of veins, you know, a big production and things like that. And I thought, yeah, I maybe should, I should do an album like this. And it was I love the album. My Thousand Suns is one of my favorite songs. It was written about a war journalist, war photographer called Neil Davis. Mm-hmm. And I read that book, One Crowded Hour, and I thought it was a wonderful book. And that inspired me to write that song.
With a very powerful, powerful.
It is song. Pretty powerful, I think. Mm. And I just thought that it was, I loved it, but it was too much like too many other things, I think, for the public.
Okay.
I think the public looked at it and think, oh, yeah, that's nice, but... And I learned a lesson very quickly after I did my blues things. I think it's great if you do, my adage now is if you do something and record something, mm-hmm. it's great if someone hates it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because if someone hates it, on the other side of the coin, someone's going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that trying to be everything to everybody is a dreadful mistake. I think you have to be true to yourself, and you do what you think is a strong commitment. And I just always feel now that I will do things that I want to get a strong reaction out of people. I want people to go, wow, that's great, or oh no, that's not for me, I don't like it. I don't want someone to say, oh, that's nice, that's a nice album. I don't want nice albums. I want an album that is something that is a statement. Yeah.
Always in the search of a perfect thing.
Yeah, and I like to evolve as well. I like to change like a chameleon. I like to be a little bit different each time. But now I think I've found my actual footing. I think I will change only within that sphere, but it will still change. It will still be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. And then after you return into a band formation, you have alternate bands formation and solos album. Why? Because music is a kind of a journey too?
It is a journey, yes. Sometimes sometimes you pick the wrong road to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll be at a crossroad, there'll be four roads. The one you've walked down, do you go across, straight across and continue in that direction, or do you tend to turn left? Because it looks a bit dark down there, and to the right it looks a bit hilly. So you tend to stay on the road in the direction you're going, and that's what I think is the danger of a lot of artists. They tend to write good songs and write albums, but each album sounds like the last one.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And that's why albums and artists become, they fall out of vogue, because I think they just become too familiar, and people get the album and their fans love it, but they don't break any new ground. People don't go, I've heard all that before. Yeah.
Yes, yes. This is the case for me, for you too. I would always say, oh, yes, this is a great new song, but it sounds like before. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I think you really need to make a bit of a statement, and sometimes you'll make dreadful mistakes and they don't work, but it's all in the fun of trying to create something.
And is it easier for you to do it on yourself alone or with the band to search different solutions?
Well, the new stuff that I'm doing, I've done all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding it really interesting because I'm not walking into the studio. What I'll do is if I do songs by myself and I'm really happy with them, I think that needs a band. At least I know where I want it to go, and I can say to the bass player, I want you to play very similar to what I'm playing, but make it probably a bit more clever and things like that. But I don't want it to go too far away from what I'm doing because I've got control over everything at the moment.
Yes, you have everything in your head, in fact.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't have anything in my head. And what I do is I find sounds by experimenting, and I will put a guitar track down, I'll listen to it, and I'll think, that's horrible. So I'll scrap that and I'll put another track down that's a little bit different. No, that's horrible. And it takes me a little while to stumble upon what I'm hoping to hear that's going to be complementary to what I've already done.
And this is just awesome because with the album name Wild Bulls and Horses, that is a still of, for me, still a modern rock or country album. And this is just awesome, as I said, because you are perfect in so many different styles. This is so rare in an artist's life to have this.
Strange enough, that album was written as almost a joke, as tongue-in-cheek. What happened, I was working with a guy called Brian Catt, and we would have support acts, and some of them were good and some of them were bad. And I said to Brian, why don't we support ourselves? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, I've got a great idea. Why don't we dress up as cowboys and call each other Earl and Merlin Earl Sweetwater from Texas, and we'll get a big American accent to introduce us, like, ladies and gentlemen, direct from Texas, America, the great Sweetwater brothers, you know, God bless America. We would come out with these false beards and hats, and everyone knew it was us. The whole audience knew it was us, but they thought it was funny. So we would play all those country songs. Then we would go off and take up all the stuff and then come out and do our normal show. And that way we didn't have to pay a support band. So it was done sort of as a joke.
It's crazy.
And then, well, I got the idea from, have you seen Spinal Tap?
Yeah.
The movie with the band Spinal Tap. Well, their follow-up movie was a thing called The Mighty Wind, which was all about folk music. And Spinal Tap, the band, toured America. And they thought, we need a support. So they went out dressed up as the folk guys and sang all those folk songs. And the crowd hated them and booed them, didn't recognize them, and threw things at them.
Just crazy.
I thought, that's great. So I stole the idea from Spinal Tap.
Okay. And then after Between Country Blues Session with Sharkmouth, and then Demon's Land and Red Dirt, Red Heart, third albums about Australian history. I have a question, because when I listen all these stories of people in Australia, I can find a taste of the sound of John Mellencamp from America. Is that normal? same stories, maybe, between...
Maybe. What I did, I decided, when I said to you before, I started off doing the blues, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I'd been writing pop songs, and I looked at myself and I thought, now, do I look believable singing pop songs at my age? This is rubbish. Uh-huh. And I thought, I'm not believable. What should I do? And I thought, go back to what got me into music, what made me love music in the very first place, blues, rhythm and blues. And I thought, I'm going to write a blues. I'm going to go back. And everyone thought I was mad in Australia. They said, blues? No one buys blues records. I said, I don't sell records anymore anyway.
Oh, really?
I said, so I'm going to do a blues album. So I was in the middle of it, and I saw an article in the paper of a guy called Thomas Archer, who was Sharkmouth, and it was his arrest photograph. And it was incredible. I loved it. And I took it home with me when I went home. And a number of weeks later, I was looking at it, and I thought, I'm going to write about a song about you. And I contacted a friend of mine, and I said, I'm going to write a song about this guy called Sharkmouth. I'll send you what I've got, and you can finish some of the lyrics. So that's what happened. And once I'd written it, I knew that was the direction to head. I thought, because I'd been trying to write songs about Little Red Roosters and New Orleans and things like that, and the Southern Delta. And I'm not American. I don't understand.
From the deep south?
Yeah, and I thought, that's not my roots and blues. My roots and blues are where I grew up and the history that happened around me. So I wrote, and I thought, and blues is really applicable because blues was around in the 1920s. So that was either that or country music, and but blues was my love. So that's the way I went. And it really caught the Australian public's emotions and attention, and that album went through the roof. And up until then, I'd been in a real lost land. I'd have never had any, for a long time, hadn't had a lot of airplay on radio. They were only playing all the old stuff. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, everything turned around and that album went platinum and we won arias and awards and everything for that album and the next two as well.
Great. And then back in 2021 with a collaboration with your old friend Rick Springfield for the project name, the Morris Springfield Project, and an album name, Jack Chrome and the Darkness Waltz, a very dark album. We are in the Halloween time. Maybe it's you work on it during the pandemic, and so this album talks about life and death, and maybe what we do around that. Correct?
Sort of, but when I lived in Los Angeles, Rick and I are pretty good friends, and we loved the Mexican festival Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
And unlike Halloween, it's not a scary festival. When I first I thought it was voodoo.
It's very happy.
And I thought, what's this? It's a voodoo festival. And I got to love it, and I came home, and I read a book called The Magic Fingers of Frankie Presto, which is about the Day of the Dead. And I loved it. And it must have gone around and around and around in my head. Then one day I wrote a song called Carmelita's Dance, which was about a young woman who was the conduit between the living and the dead. And she would go to the mythical city where they all resided and dance them down the streets of the towns. And they would bring them back. She would bring them back to their loved ones. And I wrote it. And I really loved the song. I thought, this is a lovely song. Not thinking of anything else. And then I said to my wife, I said, listen, can you film me? I'm going to put Day of the Dead makeup on. I'm going to sing a song and I'm going to put it up onto YouTube. And she said, well, what, just put it up as you? And I said, no, I'll put it up anonymously. She said, you can't. No one will find it. You've got to think of a name. And I said, oh, Jack Chrome. And she said, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I said, I don't.
It comes like that.
Yeah. I said, I've got no idea. So I did
Jack
it.
Chrome.
I put it up and Rick Springfield saw it.
He contacted
me and said, I absolutely love it. And then 2 days later, he sent me a song with him with makeup on singing a song. And I thought, wow. And then a couple of days later, he contacted me again and said, listen, would you be interested in doing an album with me, a duet album about Day of the Dead? He said, because no one in the world has ever done one. He said, to my knowledge, he said, there's never been a contemporary album done about Day of the Dead. And I said, I would love to. So we started to write and we inspired each other. We wrote it in about a month and a half. It was that he would send me two songs. So I'd write feverishly, send him two songs. And he would write through that. It was like that. And my songs are probably a bit more, we call ourselves yin and yang. He's a little bit darker than I am. If you listen to my songs, they've got more of an optimistic thing, like Tonight We Are Kings, about the gratefulness of being brought back, Carmelita's Dance, which is a joyous thing, Dancing Bones, which is
great songs.
They're supposed to be sort of positive. And I was worried that it would, particularly in Australia, because Australia, they don't understand Day of the Dead. We thought people are going to think this is maybe ghoulish, but it just, all of a sudden, it's just people have gone, we love it, and they've all gone for it, which is great.
And you work a lot on your voice because it's very powerful, very deep, dark.
When we sat down and did it, I said, Rick and I both agreed we needed to be singing from the point of view of the dead. And Jack Chrome is that conduit. And I don't think Jack Chrome would be singing like, hello to you, hello to me.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
It's more like, hello to you, hello to me. Yeah. He's got to have a gravitas. He's got to sound like he's a serious guy. He's not someone to be trifled with. So we both agreed that we would try and approach it like actors, singing as though we are the dead, singing to the living.
Will it be a next album after this one, or with Rick Springfield?
I'm not sure. Depends on the success of this one, I guess, in America, if it does anything. But I've already started. I've finished five songs at the moment. And it's along the lines of the stuff that I've done on this album, but probably a little bit more keyboard orientated.
Demo?
A lot more moods and a lot more choir sounds and things like that. But it's still got the gravitas to it, you know.
And my last question is about the ID. The final ID is because the pandemic, we were all between life and death, and it was a very special moment. This is not the end, actually. How do you deal with this kind of moment, the lockdown, etc.?
You're talking about the how do I deal with mortality and what I think?
I'm
a big science. I'm obsessed with astrophysics and quantum physics, and because we're made of so many elements that have come from supernovas, I think we just go back to the universe and we will be reborn again as something else. Whether that will go with us, it'd be lovely if it did, but we will probably be sitting here in a trillion years and I'll be you and you'll be me, but we won't remember it. In our DNA, we might remember things. I believe that in our DNA, we've lost the ability to remember. The reason I believe this, I had a dog, which was a border collie.
Lassie.
Yeah, and he came from a lost dog's home, a puppy. Right? He came. Yeah. He grew up. I took him to a farm. He jumped over the fence and started rounding up the sheep automatically. Yeah. No one had taught him. It was in his DNA memory. Yeah. I think we carry with us DNA memory. And I don't know what that means, but I really believe, and with science at the moment, there's a thing called entangled particles, which two particles can affect each other instantaneously. You can put one on Earth. You can Google this yourself, entangled particles.
Yeah.
Put one on Earth and one on Mars. You change the polarity of the one. Instantaneously, the other one changes. There's something there that's at a quantum level that's magical that we can't understand yet.
Yes.
And I think we will go back to part of the universe and probably be reborn again as something else. Hopefully our consciousness.
Another kind of energy, maybe.
Well, everything is energy. Like
everything.
Every atom that this table I'm sitting at
is energy.
Is energy, but it depends on the wavelength that it's emitting, whether it seems.
It depends how to see things.
If we look at things, our vision is such a narrow spectrum. The light. The spectrum of waves goes way out there, which we can't see.
If
I was tiny enough, I could pass through this desk like it doesn't exist. So, everything is vibration. So I don't know whether that thing of string theory is true. Who knows? Maybe everything is just a vibration. And we'll find out when we become that vibration.
Yes, great expectation. So, Russell, thank you very, very much for your time and passion around music. It was a very special and great moment for me to have the chance to talk with you.
Same with you, Jerome. We were going to come to France this year.
Well, you should.
COVID killed us.
Okay.
We'd planned to come. Whereabouts are you?
In Nice, in the south of France.
Oh, right. Yeah. We, My wife and I were going to come over because every year we will go somewhere. A couple of years ago, before COVID, we went to Italy and England and Ireland.
Okay.
And our next trip was Spain and France.
Oh, cool. In 2022?
Yeah, well, hopefully when things things change,
when
the COVID thing changes, we'll definitely be over there.
Okay, so see you in France in 2022 or maybe later.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks again for your time and passion, Russell.
Oh, sorry about yesterday. Yeah.
No problem. No problem. Take care.
And same to you.
Keep up the good work. Bye bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye, Russell.